Marvel just released Wolverine, The Long Night, their first ever scripted podcast, for free. It starts when a fishing boat is found drifting off the Alaskan coast. Two special agents arrive to find out what killed the crew. Their first suspect, a mysterious drifter named Logan. Starring Richard Armitage as Wolverine, with Scott Adsit and Chris Gethard, listen to Wolverine, The Long Night for free on apps like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or visit wolverinepodcast.com for more info. He'd only been at it a few hours, and already, Ferdinand had sweated through his shirt. He took it off and stretched. Miranda fell silent at the sight of him. It was Ferdinand's third pile of wood that he had chopped. They all needed more wood, after someone named Caliban left and didn't return. Even though the prince had put on a strong face, he was getting painful blisters. He was a prince. A king. After the very recent death of his father. These were his first blisters. Ever. But none of that mattered on this island, with these people. Miranda talked to Ferdinand in a low whisper, so Prospero, who was studying in the adjacent chamber, wouldn't hear. She told him all about the island, and he told her all about his kingdom, adding that he was serious, by the way, about the proposal. She was the most wonderful person he had ever met, and if he made it off this island, he would still love for her to be his queen. Miranda beamed. She would love that as well. So, even though this was the only face she'd ever seen, besides her father's, and she knew nothing of the world beyond the island, Miranda promised that she would love him and only him for the rest of her life. They heard a page turn in Prospero's room and immediately dropped to a whisper, just now realizing how loudly they were talking. The bear had to keep it quiet. Prospero hated Ferdinand for some reason, and Miranda worried that her father might really work him to death, that he would kill her betrothed. In the other room, Prospero sat before his books, smiling. This was almost going too well. His plan was coming together perfectly. He shook his head. No, no celebrating. Not yet. There was too much left to do. For 15 years, he had been waiting for this very moment. Everything had to be in place. It was going to be a big night. I'm Jason Weiser. From Bardic, this is Fictional. Oh, you want water? Stefano barked at Caliban. You can have your water when you finish your rum. He turned to Trinculo. Am I not a merciful god? Caliban bowed low before his new god, threw up in his mouth, and turned back to the rum. Trinculo called out that he wanted the little monster to lick his boots. Caliban sneered. His god was Stefano. Trinculo could lick his own boots. Caliban turned to Stefano. Did Stefano want Caliban to bite Trinculo to death? Stefano thought for a moment. Intriguing prospect though it was, this was his island, and death by biting was far too uncivilized. He sat up straight, turning to Trinculo. If Trinculo insulted his gross little fish monster worshiper, Stefano would hang him from a tree. With a satisfied grin, Stefano turned back to Caliban. He wanted to know about Caliban's old master. Everything. Where he lived, what his routines were, and, most importantly, how to kill him. Also, keep drinking. I didn't tell you to stop drinking. Caliban bowed low and, between sips, began to tell Stefano all about Prospero. It was then that he heard a subtle, but unmistakable, "You lie," from Trinculo's direction. Caliban leapt up, teeth bared. He didn't want to disobey his god, but he would bite Trinculo to death. Was that what Trinculo wanted? To be dead and to make Caliban a heretic? Huh? Stefano had a couple of long blinks, took a deep swig from his liquor, and asked Trinculo if he remembered what Stefano just said about hanging from the tree. About the hanging, and the tree, and the dying. Keep talking, and he'd lose some teeth. Trinculo, quite possibly the most sober of the three, sat confused. Confused, but silent. It was the books. The books were the source of his power. As we all know, because this is the Renaissance period, and this is the generally accepted means by which magic works, Caliban continued, Prospero's books enabled him to command spirits in the air. Without them, he was nothing. Prospero had told him as much, back in the good times. Burn them, shred them, or throw them into the sea. It didn't matter. Just get them away from him. And that was that. Many more words came from Trinculo's direction, interrupting Caliban's story several times, until Stefano couldn't take it anymore and started waving an empty bottle in the direction of the grumbles. Trinculo jumped up clumsily and half ran to a distance, which would require Stefano to actually get up. At the end of his monologue, Caliban revealed that he had an offering for his god, too. Prospero had many nice things, but the nicest of all was his daughter. She was beautiful, and she would look all the more beautiful in Stefano's bed. You know, once he actually made a bed. Just then, a horn blasted from the forest. Then a violin. Stefano jumped back, but Caliban barely noticed it. Oh, yeah. It's a magic island. It makes symphony noises sometimes. Nothing to be scared of. The vicious chimpanzees, or the lung snakes, though? Those are something to be scared of. Trinculo caught the lung snakes bit, but Stefano only stared out in wonder. This was a wonderful place, and he would be its ruler. He looked at Trinculo, the man's face barely visible, away from the firelight of the cave. He told the man to come on back. He wouldn't beat him. They were the only humans here, and they needed to be friends. Trinculo cautiously rejoined the pair, and Stefano found a non-jagged part of the rocks on which to lay down. He needed to sleep off the way too much rum he had just drained. But when he awoke, they would find Caliban's old master, destroy his books, and kill him. King Alonso stood with his brother, Sebastian, and Antonio, Prospero's own brother and the usurper, and they were unaware that Prospero was watching them from above. These three men had forced the former duke from his home. They had tried to murder him and his daughter that night long ago. Now they were here, right below him, and completely in his power. This was a moment planned for years, and Prospero was finally ready. Below the rocky outcropping, Gonzalo returned from the forest, shaking his head. He had been scouting up ahead. Nothing. No sign of Ferdinand. That didn't mean he was dead, of course. Just that they didn't know he wasn't. Antonio lingered behind with Sebastian as Alonso and the others walked to meet with Gonzalo. Antonio whispered to the king's brother that just because it didn't work the first time didn't mean it wouldn't work. Tonight, they would be much more tired, much harder to rouse from sleep. Wait, did Sebastian hear that? Sebastian nodded, eyes darting. He already wasn't listening to Antonio. There was music. Music all around. The men were so spellbound that they didn't even reach for their swords when the people appeared. Shadowy shells of humans filtered from the forest. Except they weren't humans. They were something different. They lurched and dragged themselves from the forest, their warped appendages gripping tables made of shadows so dark they nearly took form in the clearing. Then the workers came setting out plates and napkins and utensils. Then the food appeared. Alonso, Sebastian, and the others began salivating. The food was real, and the hungry group hadn't eaten since the previous night. Prospero watched the scene play out and smiled. With a wave of his hand, the shadowy forms disappeared like smoke, leaving only the food. You should never take candy from strangers, but a banquet from shadowy demons? Absolutely cool. So the king, after one brief objection that he shouldn't eat in light of his grief over Ferdinand, quickly convinced himself that it was okay and sat down alongside Sebastian and Antonio at the feast. The king was the first to bite into the meal, or the first to nearly bite into the meal. The roast duck smelled so good. But when he raised it to his mouth and bit down, he found only shadow and smoke. To their great disappointment, the rest of the men discovered the same thing. Some reached and tried to grab more food, but the table and everything on it turned to smoke and floated away on the wind. Then their chairs left them, all at once, though. Prospero chuckled. That one was just fun. Flat on their backs, the men on the beach heard a screech from the darkening sky and began to register enormous wings, beating the darkness. All fires went out, and they were left with only the last light of the setting sun to illuminate the sky above. A woman hovered with massive wings and sharp, hooked talons. It was a harpy, and even more terrifying than what she looked like was what she said. Antonio, Sebastian, and Alonso found themselves no longer in the clearing, surrounded by their servants and courtiers. They had blinked, and they were now alone in a vast wasteland, with a monster hovering over them. The three were sinners. They had been condemned here by fate to madness and death. Immediately, Antonio and Sebastian drew their swords, but the harpy only laughed. She continued, "The three knew why they were here. Prospero." Antonio turned pale and froze. He and Alonso looked at each other, and the harpy spoke again. "In Milan, they forced Prospero and his daughter into the sea. The harpies had already claimed one victim. They took Alonso's son from him for what they'd done to Miranda, who had just been months shy of 3 years old at the time. At least Ferdinand had gone quickly. Alonso would be destroyed slowly, in hunger and madness and tears. And even if they tried to use those swords, they'd never succeed. The harpy would always be there, watching the men slowly crumble. They didn't deserve so good an end after what they'd done to Prospero."
Your Majesty, are you all right?"
It was Gonzalo. The three were back in the clearing. Alonso stared off into the open sky. His son was dead. His son was dead, and he was going to be driven mad before he died, as punishment for what he had done to Prospero. Tears welled up in his eyes. He would make the harpy's job easier. He was going to drown himself, going to join his boy. And on the way, he mouthed Prospero's name over and over again.
"Where's he going?" Gonzalo asked the others. The courtiers didn't know, and Antonio and Sebastian, the only other two who had seen the harpy, didn't answer. With swords still drawn, Sebastian looked to Antonio. Yes, they were both thinking the same thing. The harpies weren't demons. They were creatures. And creatures could bleed. Even if they were a legion, the pair could take them out one by one. In the background, Gonzalo shouted louder and louder. What was going on? What had they seen? No one replied. Instead, the pair took off in the opposite direction of the king, into the forest, to discover what lurked on the island. Gonzalo threw up his hands. He yelled to half of the group to follow Sebastian and Antonio, keep them from doing anything too stupid. He took the other group and followed the king. He didn't know why the crying monarch was ambling toward the sea, but he didn't like it. We'll follow them and catch up with everyone else on the island, but that will be right after this. Today's episode is brought to you by Bombas. Socks. How can something so small make such a big difference? I really have to know. I was always like a neutral sock wearer myself. Take them or leave them, they're socks. But then I tried Bombas and everything changed. Suddenly, out of nowhere, I'm a sock guy. Is that even a thing? I don't know, but I'm one of them now. I'm taking better care of them. We're finding fewer singles in the dryer, which is really putting a damper on the sock dating scene, by the way. And seriously, I'm gradually replacing all my socks at large with Bombas. They've got it all. Plenty of cushion without the bulk, great arch support, super soft cotton, and their stay-up technology is genius because these socks never fall down in my shoe, whether I'm in a meeting, at the gym, helping my son on a bike ride, or hiking on the weekend. So here's what I'll say. Treat your feet. Don't wear just any sock. Wear Bombas. Go to bombas.com/fictional and use code fictional for 20% off your first order. That's bombas.com/fictional, code fictional, and you'll get 20% off your first order. Today, I want to tell you about a podcast you'll love called Steal the Stars. Steal the Stars is a sci-fi audio drama by Mac Rogers, the award-winning author of The Message and Life After. It's a captivating story of illicit romance, crashed UFO, and an impossible heist. Dakota and Matt are two government employees guarding the biggest secret on the planet, a crashed UFO. But when they violate a clause of their contracts, by falling in love, their best chance to escape is to steal the alien body they've been guarding and sell the secret of its existence. Because once you break one rule, what's stopping you from breaking them all? Steal the Stars has been called a top sci-fi podcast with rave reviews from Wired, The Verge, and Geek Girl Authority. Start binge listening and learn why more than a million listeners have tuned into this addictive audio drama. You can listen to Steal the Stars wherever you get your podcasts and hit subscribe. Again, that's Steal the Stars. Elsewhere, Ferdinand, the Prince of Naples, hunched next to a smiling Prospero. The old man turned from the show. "Want more wine, son?" Ferdinand smiled awkwardly and nodded. "Sure, yeah, okay." As he drank the wine and watched the magic show next to his new fiancée, he didn't quite know what to think. The last half hour had been awesome, but it was just so weird. Prospero had come back, skipping along the path. Miranda was confused and more than a little scared. Why was Dad so happy? Of course Prospero waved it off. His daughter didn't need to worry about any of that, and why was this kid breaking rocks here? He asked, gesturing to Ferdinand. Because you threatened me with lung snakes if I didn't? Ferdinand replied, careful not to stop breaking rocks. Prospero chuckled. He knew. He was just messing with Ferdinand, but now the man could stop. Ferdinand didn't stop, and Prospero laughed again. Smart. The young man could stop, and he wouldn't put snakes in his lungs, or bees, or monkeys, or any of the other things he had threatened the young king with. Ferdinand let go of the rocks, and Prospero went over and threw his arm around him. He just wanted to make sure Ferdinand was right for his daughter. She was his whole world, you know. Ferdinand had said he wanted to marry her, correct? Eagerly, Ferdinand nodded. Absolutely. He wanted it more than anything in the world. I mean, getting off this island and away from his crazy magician of a future father-in-law was a very close second, but Mary Miranda was still his number one. Now, as Ferdinand sat at dinner, he couldn't believe this turn of events. After kind of way too much talk of the dangers of premarital sex from his future father-in-law, the trio had sat down to enjoy a show. Hera, Iris, and Demeter, three goddesses of the ancient world, appeared and blessed the newly betrothed couple. Prospero watched Ferdinand and Miranda sitting next to each other with big grins across their faces. Happy. His magic had cost him so much. But if it could make his daughter feel this way, Prospero smiled and tears of joy came to his eyes. Despite all of his enemies and all of his plans, he was happy to be sharing this moment with Miranda, the man she loved. For the first time in years, he didn't feel like a displaced duke or a vengeful wizard, but a father, and a happy one at that. But then, Prospero remembered. Alonso was walking into the sea, and Sebastian and Antonio were still far off, but Caliban and the drunk idiots. Prospero realized he had waited too long. With a wave of his staff, the show before them disappeared. He, Miranda, and Ferdinand were again sitting in the dark, just a small campfire before them. Miranda furrowed her brow. Something was wrong. Her father was anxious. She had only seen him emotional once in her life, the day that Caliban attacked her. Caliban had screamed for a week after that. Now, he begged Miranda and Ferdinand to get inside the cave. They must be tired. Also, Prospero had to go. There were things to think about. Things he had to do. Just please, get inside. Everything will be clear in a few hours. Prospero waited until the door of his cave closed, and he sealed it. Good. They'd be safe. He stared off to the stars and chastised himself. His happiness had nearly cost him his revenge. But the most troubling thing? He was almost glad for it. In the woods, Caliban, Trinculo, and Stefano were soaked through and shivering. Thorn bushes had sliced their shins a dozen times over, and the latrine water Prospero had just led them through, that now permeated their fresh wounds, was just so great for 16th century medicine. Trinculo and Stefano were finally sobering up, and this was not a good thing. They were getting louder, angrier. The bottle had disappeared after they first set out. Already, Caliban could see Prospero's hand at work, and, facing sobriety because of their possibly stolen, possibly just misplaced bottle of liquor, Trinculo and Stefano were starting to fear his power too. In the darkness, the trio spotted the cave. They had arrived. A small campfire just outside dwindled, reduced to just a few glowing embers. All was as quiet as the grave. This was their chance. Prospero must be asleep, and all they had to do was bring a knife. One quick slice, and the island would be theirs, and... Guys, wait. What are you doing? Trinculo and Stefano were the most sober they had been in days, but apparently, this still wasn't sober enough to not do a fashion show. The two had found the garments hanging on the clothesline, even before Caliban realized they had gone. Caliban ran to them, bowed low, and begged them, please, they were so close. One quick stab and the danger would be over. Then absolutely, they could dress up all they wanted. Stefano batted the fish monster away, but he wanted to look like a king right now. Caliban darted back and forth between the two men, pleading anxiously and pulling at the clothes. The old man didn't dress like this, and he never hung his clothes out to dry. He had magic for that. This was a trap, and it was working. They had to go. Oh no. All around them, illuminated by the last flickers of the fire, were eyes. Eyes looking out at them. Eyes that had taken shape from the shadows. Caliban trembled. He had seen those eyes far too often for there to be any mistake. They had walked right into Prospero's trap, and the old man was surely going to kill them. Caliban booked it, and as Stefano and Trinculo watched the shapes lurch from the forest, they quickly followed their servant, all the shadows trailing close behind. At this point, Sebastian and Antonio were also venturing, with swords drawn, deeper and deeper into the forest, when they heard a cough and a sputter. Together, they looked at each other and rushed toward the sound. At the first light of dawn, the pair pushed through the leaves and branches, tumbling into the clearing where they found their king. Alonso was tied to a tree, vomiting seawater. Next to him sat Gonzalo, his faithful advisor, soaked to his chest in seawater, and a half dozen dry courtiers that had watched the old man struggle to save the king before they all woke up here. King Alonso jerked against his restraints, looking up at his brother with wide eyes. Run, was all he could manage, before a vine snaked across his neck, pulling tight, choking him. Antonio and Sebastian turned to see the group that had been following them, the ones who had been commanded to make sure the group didn't do anything stupid, being gagged and pulled toward trees of their own by the unrelenting vines that grew from the ground. Antonio and Sebastian moved to cut the vines, but found that they, too, were stuck. They looked down. Their feet were now melded with the ground and a mass of vines fighting one another to hold them in place. Antonio was the first to raise his sword, but the magical vine found his hand before the sword could sever it. It wrapped around his wrist, looping between fingers, stretching and nearly snapping them like twigs, before Antonio dropped his sword. The vines wrapped around Antonio's head and neck as they formed a chair beneath him. They squeezed tighter and tighter, and as Antonio struggled for air and the darkness crept in, he recognized a familiar shape gliding toward him in the clearing. He hadn't seen the man in over a decade, since the time he stole the man's dukedom and birthright. As Antonio lost consciousness, he saw the unmistakable form of Prospero, his brother, smiling down at him. In his chamber, Prospero called a hat and clothes to himself, as well as a sword. It had been years. They might not recognize him, some old man living in exile on an island. He hadn't touched these robes in eons, because he was saving them for this day. The old garments still held saltwater stains from the weeks at sea, the bottom hem fraying from those first nights, the ones before Caliban arrived, and Prospero and Miranda were trying to build a fire. These robes told a story of a brother backed by a king who threw his friendship to a prince and would have killed his family for his ambition. It told the story of a father and daughter fleeing into the darkness and finding a home. Prospero slid a sword into his scabbard. It told a story that would end tonight. Silently, he left his chamber. The others wouldn't wake. Not yet. Not until it was finished. But these four would. Prospero looked on Gonzalo, Sebastian, Alonso, and Antonio waking by the fire. His hand rested on his hilt. These were royalty, dukes, noblemen. But here, they were mere men. Men who had conspired against him, had tried to kill him, and attempted to take his daughter. Here on this island, they were in Prospero's power. He was king. He could execute them, now. And that would be far better than they deserved. Prospero took a deep breath, and his hand left his sword. Violence had brought him 15 years of pain, and even though they were deserving, there would be no more of it. Prospero nodded. They were awake enough now. "I forgive you," he announced to the group. The words hit each man differently. Gonzalo nodded with a smirk. Sebastian, King Alonso's brother, shrunk. Antonio froze, looking in terror at the man he had betrayed. And King Alonso? Well, King Alonso lost it. The king crawled across the dirt, over to Prospero's feet. He wept on the old duke's sandals, saying that turning against the man was the biggest mistake of his life. How had Prospero survived at sea in just that boat? Prospero looked at Gonzalo with a smile. He had a friend. The king clambered to his feet and embraced Prospero, who patted Alonso on the back and stepped past Sebastian, still cowering on the ground. He stood over Antonio, and he looked at he and Sebastian. He said nothing, but they heard his voice in their minds. I know what you planned on the beach. For now, I will say nothing, but remember, I know. For Antonio, there were no words. Prospero would forgive him, but he would never forget. He would certainly never call him brother again. The words sat in his mouth like an infection. Still, as Prospero stood over the man, he held out his hand. He helped Antonio off the ground and looked him in the eye. Prospero's greatest kindness would be Antonio's worst punishment. Antonio would live. He would return to Milan, and he would resume a position like his old one, only far, far lower. It would be even worse now, having tasted the dukedom and having it all taken from him. All the people he had relished in calling his servants, they would once again be his peers, his betters, even. Now that Prospero had an heir, he would make sure that Antonio lived, once again, as a second son. Always dreaming of greatness, but never attaining it. Prospero turned from Antonio to King Alonso, who was now bursting with questions. How had he survived? They didn't even know how they'd survived their own shipwreck. But then, Alonso stopped. Some of them didn't survive. Alonso shared that his son had died, just yesterday. Prospero put his hand on the king's shoulder. He understood. He, too, lost his daughter after that same storm. He was dealing with it, and sighed. They should eat. Everyone looked like they hadn't had a good meal in days, and Prospero had prepared something. It was simple, but the door to his cave was right there. He added casually to Alonso that he was very grateful for his dukedom back. And, in return, he had something nearly as precious for the king. With a nod, the king opened the door and stopped cold. It was Ferdinand, his son, sitting and playing chess with Miranda. The next day, Prospero stood on the bow of the ship. They would all be there soon. He had left them at breakfast. Miranda was amazed by such a world with such wonderful people in it. Prospero smiled. She would make a good queen. Alonso couldn't have been more happy with the wife his son had found. Sebastian and Antonio remained silent. Below, Prospero heard snoring and chuckled. Trinculo and Stefano hadn't stayed the night in the cave with everyone else. They were too terrified by his magic. And that was probably for the best. They had found the ship that Prospero had preserved with his magic after the storm, and all the crewmen still sleeping inside of it. As for Caliban, Caliban would wake up in his hut later on that day, after Prospero's spell wore off. He would find that the island was his again. he could have his mother's cave back, and he would live as he had before. He would be free, but he would be alone. Now, there was one more thing left to do. The spell he had put on Caliban would be his last spell. Prospero pulled the books from his pack and rested them on the edge of the ship. He took a deep breath, running his fingers along the covers. He remembered when he had started his studies. It had been a lifelong dream. He chuckled. It had been less than a dream. Dreams felt possible. Except it had been possible. And look what his singular, relentless focus at the expense of everything else in his life had brought him. Exile. Near death. 15 years trapped on a rock. All that power, it was nothing compared to having even a single friend. He looked over his books and his staff. He had been given a second chance, and he wouldn't make the same mistake twice. So, there was one more thing left to do. Prospero whispered a few words to himself, and from the top down, his staff disintegrated into dust, which was quickly whisked away by the winds. He looked on his books, and all they meant, all that power, all they had cost. One by one, he tipped them overboard and watched them slide from the railing. They plopped into the water, and the ocean began to take back the mysteries of the universe in the form of ink, streaming off the quickly soaking pages. Prospero didn't watch them sink. He walked, smiling, back to his cave for the final time to get his daughter and his king. It was over. He was free. And now it was time to go home. This was Shakespeare's last play, and one of his most popular ones. As such, a lot of ink has been spilled on nearly every part of it. From the post-colonial themes of a European arriving in a tropical climate and enslaving the inhabitants, to the play's near constant allusions to, well, plays. One of the things I personally found most interesting was how Prospero had all this power. He had his political enemies before him, with every justification to take revenge, but he uses his power not for vengeance, but for forgiveness. Granted, forgiveness really was the only way for his daughter to have a life. This way, Miranda will be a queen. If Prospero had taken his revenge, Miranda would have lived and died as a castaway. It's all the more terrifying when you think about the quickly aging Prospero dying, and Miranda effectively being defenseless against Caliban. So in a way, forgiveness wasn't just the most admirable option, but the only option in which Miranda is safe. If you're familiar with The Tempest, you might be noticing a lack of Ariel, Prospero's chief spirit who does a lot of his magic. As I alluded to in the story, Prospero's magic consisted of him commanding the spirits of the air to do things for him. Ariel was a representation of that, and when he gave up his magic at the end of the story, he was essentially freeing all the spirits that he had under his command. I didn't include Ariel because I felt like it was more effective in podcast form to show the effects of the magic, rather than have Prospero explain it to Ariel, who then went and did it. As always, if you like today's story, we highly recommend checking out the original basis for our adaptation at your local library, bookstore, for free online, or wherever you find your books. That's it for this week. Today's episode was adapted from The Tempest by William Shakespeare. It was written by me, Jason Weiser, and edited and produced by Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Next week, it's our three-part wrap-up of not only this season, but of The Count of Monte Cristo. So check it out. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.